This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs, a public park run by a public trust in perpetuity. That's the plan for the very popular Taman Tugu, a 66-acre rehabilitated and regenerated forest park right in the heart of Kuala Lumpur. With more than 5 kilometres of forest trails, which is open and free to all, the park was initially set to be converted into a for-profit tourist attraction theme park before it was protected. So today I'm going to speak to Calvin Jacob, the executive director of the Taman Tugu Project, and Tracy Surin, who is Taman Tugu Project's head of fundraising, activation and communications, about how this model of a public trust works and why Taman Tugu is literally a breath of fresh air right here in urban Kuala Lumpur. Welcome, both of you. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. Hi, Juliet. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Yes,
thanks for having us, Juliet.
Absolutely. Good afternoon. Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me today. So, you know, as I mentioned, it was, you know, the site was initially brought to Khazana's attention as a proposal to be converted into a theme park, am I correct? And at the same time, I know other developers were pursuing the land for commercial development. And it was also a dumping ground from what I understand from everything I've read. And now it's this beautiful green sanctuary, right? Can you share that journey with us, you know, how Taman Tugu actually came to be?
Okay, let me start, Juliet. So the site was initially brought to Khazana's attention along with other potential developers to be converted into a for-profit project.
Sure.
This was all part of the government's plans for economic development and economic stimulus. When we initially looked at the site, we thought, okay, it makes sense for development. And one of the projects that we identified for the site was a theme park, a for-profit tourist attraction theme park. And that thinking was in line with the government's plan because a theme park in that space right behind the National Monument could add to economic multipliers for the country and things like that. So we went ahead and we started looking at it and exploring it further. We know other developers who were after the land as well, because it's really prime land right in the heart of the city. Mm. But after we started embarking on it, we were approached by various NGOs about, why don't you guys consider preserving the site? You know, it's a pristine piece of land. It's probably one of the last green lungs of that size right in the heart of the city. And after having a lot of conversations on that vein, we went back to the government and we counter-proposed to allow us to convert the site into a public park with the condition that the site is preserved into perpetuity as a public green space. And to our surprise, the government actually agreed to do it, because in doing so, whilst Khazana committed to undertake this as a not-for-profit CSR project for the people, on the government side, it also entailed them committing the land for this project, mm-hmm. A piece of land that could otherwise be used for commercial purposes. So it was, we ended up on the same wavelength with this. But the question then to us was, what do you mean by preserving into perpetuity?
Yeah.
We actually really didn't know what we meant by it, but we knew we wanted it to be there, not for us to do this today. And a couple of years later, it's, you know, the purpose of the land is changed and things like that. So we did a bit of research and we quite like the model in the UK where they have a national trust.
Yes.
The national trust today is, you know, about 100 years old. It's actually one of the largest landowners in the UK. And includes the entire shoreline, various heritage buildings, old castles and manors, and parks as well. So it's protected under the National Trust. And what we said was, as part of the Taman Tugu project, we will do two parts. One is we will convert this space, this 66 acres, into a public park, make it publicly accessible for free, as you mentioned, and things like that. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, there's a whole legal framework around it where we will establish a national trust equivalent in Malaysia. And as of now, we have established that. It's called Amanah Warisan Negara, or AWAN for short. You know, the English translation would be a National Heritage Trust. And the land will be owned and managed by this trust into perpetuity. So Khazanah sets up the whole thing. We develop the area. We ensure that it's going to be protected and managed by the trust. We set up the trust in a sustainable way from a funding perspective, so that eventually this trust runs Taman Tugu and potentially other projects of this nature in the future. So that's by and large sort of the background where this thing is heading.
Okay. And since you've brought up Awan and, you know, how it's going to work, and you said that it's going to be run sustainably, right? How does that work, actually? How will it be sustainable? Or, I mean, what are the plans to make it sustainable?
Right. So one of the things that, when Khazanah set out is that we wanted to use this as an example where other corporates could also play similar roles, be it via Awan for Taman Tugu or other projects or on their own. The thinking is that CSR initiatives that are undertaken by corporates should be along this vein, where you look at long-term sustainability of projects as opposed to one-off contributions.
Right, yeah.
Now, the National Trust in the UK is sustainable via various means. They get donors, they get corporate pledges, but they also have means of raising money on their own. There's a membership program. There's sales of merchandise, there are cafes and so on and so forth within their sites. And if you look at it, those are some of those things that Tracy is focusing on today.
Mm-hmm.
So apart from the conservation, preservation and activation of the site, another work track that's running is something that Tracy is doing. Tracy, you want to add some of the things that you're doing in that space?
Yeah, go ahead, Tracy.
All right. So there are many ways for people to support Taman Tugu or Awan here. One of it would be adopting your trees, benches, and swings. So we've done an option where one can actually adopt into perpetuity. Or if not, we've come up with an alternative where one can also adopt, individuals or corporates can also adopt annually. You know, so that's one. And we also do accept donations or endowments. I think that's even on a weekly basis, we do find that public or Malaysians actually do support us, even if it's a couple of ringgit. But if everyone helps, you know, it adds up and it does make a huge difference to us.
Yeah.
Apart from that, we also do sell merchandise. So that's another way where people can actually help us.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can actually book our space, whether it's our nursery. We've got a few covered spaces there, and they can book it for events. So that's another revenue stream for us.
Okay. And that's something obviously that you're actively working on as well, right? I suppose looking for new options, looking for different ways of making sure that this is something that remains for the public in perpetuity, right? That is what we, that's the grand aim. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Juliet, I mean, we've been really overwhelmed with the support we've been getting in this space,
mm-hmm.
from big ticket items that's been taken up by corporates, to, you know, even any family that comes for a walk, there's no charges to the place, but on the way out, they just put a small donation. And all this adds up to help us in keeping the place sustainable. So this the management and running of public spaces outside of the government coffers, so to speak, is a model that you see in other countries as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the National Trust is one model. Central Park, one of the most famous parks in the world, is also run on such models. If you walk in Central Park, I've personally not been there, but you know, we've explored these models. You will see benches that are adopted by people, right? A couple goes there and they adopt it. You put a plaque on the bench and many years later, you go back and you see it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have as many benches as they do in Central Park, but we've got a lot more trees and you can adopt a tree. You can put a plaque there dedicated to your kids or your grandkids or whatever have you. And it's a new model here, so it's slowly starting to pick up pace, but it is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's quite wonderful. Yeah, sorry.
I was just going to say, so this is the first of its kind here in Malaysia. Am I correct in saying that?
Well, it has been. You know, there are numerous parks in Malaysia where individuals and corporates do contribute to it. But this is one of the first of its kind where it is, and the intention is that it is entirely going to be run on sustainable funding, if you like.
Okay. All right. I'm speaking today to Kelvin Jacob and Tracy Surin. Kelvin is the executive director of the Taman Tugu Project, and Tracy is the head of fundraising, activation and communications, also at the Taman Tugu Project. And we're talking all about, you know, this wonderful park right here in the center of Kuala Lumpur, literally a breath of fresh air for so many of us. And, you know, both Kelvin and Tracy were explaining how it is a public park run by a public trust and how they hope that will be run in perpetuity as such. And after this quick break, we're going to come back and find out more about the park itself. Stay tuned to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line today are Kelvin Jacob and Tracy Surin. Kelvin is the executive director of the Taman Tugu Project, and Tracy is the head of fundraising, activation and communications, also with the Taman Tugu Project. And we're talking about, as you guessed it, Taman Tugu. So before the break, guys, you were telling us about how, I will say, how it was saved from commercial development and made into a public park for everyone. Can we talk a little bit about, you know, that transformation? So, I mean, from what I understand, it was sort of like a dumping ground before, you know, you guys took over and started rehabilitating it and, you know, making it ready for the public, right? Can you tell me a little bit about that whole process?
Okay, so we started on the note where it was going to be a commercial development, and we were approached by various parties to save this pristine green lung. And in fact, you know, on the face of it, if you look at it, yes, it's a wonderful green space, right? Now, Kazana, we don't really have a background in parks and so on and so forth. So one of the things that we were very clear about from the start was that this needed to be a collaboration between various parties to make it successful.
Okay.
So in our minds, it's going to be a public-private civil society partnership. So public, we're talking about the government, and we put the first and foremost, the government commitment to this was the land. But apart from that, we collaborate very closely with DBKL, who have assisted us in numerous ways in moving this forward. Kementerian Wilayah Persekutuan, under which DBKL sits, Jabatan Perhutanan Malaysia, just to name some of the agencies that we work with, right? So when we were told that this is pristine, we work with FRIM and Jabatan Perhutanan, let's go and identify all the trees in there that we are going to preserve, and ensure that these are tagged and that they will always be there, subject to natural causes.
Okay.
And, you know, some of the trees in there included things like the jelutong, the tembusu, kulai. Some of these measure more than a meter in diameter, which sort of points towards the fact that they're probably about 100 years old. Then we worked with them and they said, let's try and direct this site close as possible towards a natural rainforest and create real good urban biodiversity and create an ecosystem that's going to thrive. So we said that, you know, in doing so, we're going to add 4,000 trees to the site. So we worked with nurseries across the country. We ran an RFP process, and we are transplanting. To date, we've already done about 3,000 out of 4,000 trees that we are transplanting into the site. And these are big trees. These are trees that are about 10 to 15 years old. And in selecting the trees, we wanted them to be indigenous Malaysian rainforest trees. And of the various species that is possible, we looked at species with different types of fruits and flowers and stuff that will attract wildlife, from birds to monkeys to squirrels, who will then help natural pollination, not just within the site, but beyond, in other green spaces around the thing. So that's been going. And that's one of the things that you will really enjoy when you go into the site. Now, in terms of the trails, because we wanted to preserve the trees that were within the site, we created the trails in a discoverable manner on site. Mm-hmm. So we walk and we go around trees and, we snake around and things like that. Now, one of the questions, Julia, that we are asked is, hey, this Taman Tugu, how high is the hike?
Yes.
In actual fact, you've been there and you realize that the site is actually one that you descend into.
That's right, yeah.
It's a beautiful undulating hike. So although it's only 5 kilometers, some people come out huffing and puffing and saying that, oh, this is a lot more. But it's a nice walk and you can take shorter routes, right? Mm-hmm. But one of the things that we realized as we were creating these trails in this discoverable way is that That site, because it's a site that you descend into, it had become a dumping ground. Mm. So we imagine, unfortunately, there are some irresponsible organizations that just may have backed up trucks and dumped rubbish into the site. So from an initial view of a project that involved preservation and conservation of a green site, it ended up being a lot more about a rehabilitation of what appeared to be an illegal dumping ground. Mm-hmm. To date, we have removed around 300 truckloads of rubbish from the site.
That's insane. It is.
But that's the reality of the past. And we're very grateful that today people are a lot more responsible than that. And we've done it with a lot of care, and all this rubbish was removed by hand from the site because we didn't allow big trucks to go into the site.
So that's really
some history. So what we initially imagined was pure pristine green actually had a lot of rubbish in it. We've removed it, and now the green really starts to shine. We've added to the green, as I mentioned. Initially we had a view of 1,000 wood trees on site. We've added 4,000 trees, which is why the entrance to the park is called the Taman Tugu Nursery. Mm-hmm. Because when we brought in trees from other nurseries, we had to acclimatize it to the site before we started transplanting it within the site to ensure that it sustains. So that's really some of the background of that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not been easy, has it? It's been quite a crazy journey, but I mean, really paying off. I've been there, as you mentioned. I absolutely love it and every single part of it. Anyone who's been there is like, how did they not hear about this? You know, they're so relieved to find this green space right in the center of the city. It's really something that, yeah, it's for everybody, isn't it? And it's really, really wonderful. And like you said, you collaborated with lots of different partners. I know Frim was involved as well, helping with all the trees and all of that as well.
Absolutely. I mean, Frim is one of the best bodies of knowledge when it comes to forests, not just in Malaysia but across the region and possibly in the world as well. So we worked with Frim very closely in identifying the trees that were within the site. They helped us tag it. They helped us in the selection of the species that we were going to add to the site. And we got a lot of advice from them in terms of what trees are suited in which area of the park, which needed direct sunlight, which needed a bit more shade, which are going to attract which type of flora and fauna and things like that. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. We've been very, very grateful for the partnership, as I mentioned just now, right? Public, private and civil society. So Frim is one of them from the public side. And from the civil society side, I mean, we've worked with organizations who've contributed a lot. Malaysian Nature Society is one of those whom we've partnered very closely with. As we were setting up the site, they offered us a nursery within their space so that we can start preparing trees. They helped us with a lot of the transplanting programs. They helped us with a lot of the initial education programs. Today, we work with a lot more NGOs. Tracy works with a lot of them, Tracy. Some of them like GEC.
GEC, also FTS, EcoNights. I think we believe partnerships are important and each of them actually support a good cause. Mm-hmm. So we believe that we can actually complement each other that way. So they've been very supportive with us. So like with FTS, Fishery Society, they run our nature education program, which is fully sponsored by CIMB Islamic. And this is a two-hour environmental program that's run every Saturdays between 4 to 6 p.m. And it's free for public. They just need to sign up. The only thing at the moment is you need to be fully vaccinated to be able to join this program.
That's right.
With GEC, Global Environment Center, for example, we've run quite a number of river care programs where kids and even adults, they've also helped out with restoration works within the site where we've got little streams. People can sign up for that. So we've been very lucky that way to have partners who have been very supportive and who also believe that education and exposing kids, especially from a young age or even adults, is key.
I can't agree with you anymore. I mean, I was telling you guys before the interview started, I mean, that's one of the first places I took my youngest daughter to. It was the first forest she ever visited. You know, I took my elder daughter for nature school there, you know, from a child who was scared of mud to somebody who was playing in the Tamantugu rivers, like catching, you know, all sorts of like insects and learning about them. And I love that. I think it was pre-pandemic time, of course, 2019, where you guys hosted so many different organizations. There were so many events. You know, so many public events for everyone with all the different NGOs. It was such a good way to I guess bridge that, right? The public and all these CSOs, yes. and having this wonderful setting to do all of that. And I suppose now that we're slowly, hopefully, inching back to whatever this new normal is, that will hopefully be in the pipeline as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
You see, Juliet, it's a small space, 66 acres. Yes, it's a nice size, mm-hmm. but in the scheme of things, it's a small space. Saving this green space is not going to make a big impact towards the climate reality agenda. Mm-hmm. But what we hope this does is create a lot more of awareness. And one of the ways that we drive this is through the various education programs that we run on site. And like you mentioned, city folks and city kids, they come there and this is the first time they're in a forest environment. I mean, it's right smack in the heart of the city, but in the depths of Tamantugu, you don't hear the city, and they get to experience what a forest is like. They experience, you know, you experience the serenity of the site. The idea is that this will be an impetus to drive a mindset of conservation, preservation, and really saving planet Earth. In line with that, I guess.
Yeah. And what do you guys, I mean, you've been working there for the last 3-4 years or even more, you know, what is it about the park that you love in particular? You know, what is it, what is your selling point to get people to come visit?
I guess for me, it's amazing to have a forest right in the heart of the city. It makes things convenient. You don't have to travel out far just to experience it or to even enjoy it. I think Kelvin mentioned this point earlier. When walking the trails, you know, the fresh air, you just forget that you're actually right in town. You're just next to Jalan Parliament. you really don't hear traffic, you know, so that's amazing. And I guess for me, it's also just being amazed with the trees that we have in there. So one of my personal favorites would be the Tumbusu tree because of the striations it has on its bark. It's just amazing to see some of these things, which, you know, where else can I go to see it?
Yeah.
So I'm very blessed to be working next to a park.
For me, Juliet, I really enjoy people watching. And one of the things that I really, really enjoyed seeing is people from different generations and from various communities coming and enjoying the space. So, you see mothers with babies in a carrier. It's not a site that is suitable for prams. I mean, it's an undulating forest trail. And you see kids running through the forest. You see teenagers coming, and it's a wonderful site for Instagrammable photos and things like that. So that's the attraction for that generation. Apart from enjoying the green space, you see parents and you see grandparents walking the site. So whilst it's a 5-kilometer undulating trail, there are shortcuts, there are shorter trails, there are easier paths that you can take, and it serves all generations.
Yeah.
The other thing that I quite like about the site is that it's a forest, and a forest is a living, breathing organism on its own. Every time you go, the trees look different, the trails look different. And, you know, the site was actually home back when, to British government quarters. Mm-hmm. Eventually, when the British left, it was home to Malaysian government quarters. This includes Jabatan Pertanian and JKR, whose offices are still within the area, not within the site. And as you walk the trails, you will notice remnants of these quarters on site. Mm. And some of the new trails that has recently been opened, actually takes you through some of these old structures and things like that within the site. In fact, the site, you know, was previously home to Malaysia's first Lord President, Malaysia's first Director of Agriculture and Finance, Malaysia's Director of Agriculture and Finance Minister Tun Tan Siew Sin. So they used to live within that site. So it's a site where people used to live. And some of the remnants of this, you know, you will come across it, you'll stumble through it as you walk the trail. So that's quite interesting for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, it's a living piece of history right there, isn't it? Quite fascinating. Absolutely. And it's a wonderful place, and lots more people are visiting now, especially now that the park has reopened, right? Now that we're, I suppose today we're in phase four already. So are people coming back? You know, are there some sorts of, what sort of things are still open to them? You know, what sort of projects can they sort of participate in if they were to come?
Right. So throughout the pandemic and the various phases of the MCO, you know, as mentioned, we collaborated very closely with government, with the relevant government departments. Jabatan Landscape Malaysia is one I forgot to mention, and DBKL, to see how we can open to the public to provide them a space where they can go out of their homes in a safe way. Mm-hmm. So we've put in place various SOPs. We've converted the entire trail to a one-way loop. We control the number of people that is within the trails at any one point in time. And as you mentioned, now what we're starting to do is that we're starting to reintroduce some of the programs that we have, education programs especially. Last week, two weekends back, we started allowing the sale of these small pop-up stalls within the site. Mm-hmm. So there's the main nursery, which is the main entrance, and all this happens there. And then the trails are kept pristine and serene. And right now, Julia, what we're seeing is that we're having a lot more visitors than we had pre-pandemic. I think, one of the good things about the pandemic is that it's made us realize and appreciate nature a lot more. It's made people a lot more health conscious. So we get a lot of trail runners and joggers coming through the site either in the early mornings or even after work in the evenings.
Yeah. And a lot of families too.
Yeah.
A lot of families. So you see various groups, you know, even kids as young as, like you said, babies or even 2 or 3 year olds, and they're coming to the park, which is great, to be outdoors, to be exposed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Kelvin's point, which I think I cut him off, was in our numbers on a weekly basis, it's far much greater than what it was pre-COVID.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's been good that way. It's been very positive.
We opened very late in 2018. We opened September, just as we're entering the fourth quarter of 2018, and we've been opening it on a phased basis. We didn't think, because of the way we've treated the place, the trails are created in a discoverable way.
Yeah.
We first opened a phase of just 1.5 kilometers and then 3 kilometers. It's now 5 kilometers. We've still got some spaces within the site which we haven't opened. But to date, so late 2018, so 2019, we had a full year. 2020, 2021, we've been going in and out of MCO. There have been times when it's been completely closed, especially during the FMCO and things like that.
Yep.
But today, we've had close to 500,000 visitors that have come through the site.
Wow.
Within that short time, and once again, we've been very lucky, right? Lonely Planet magazine, unfortunately, I understand they no longer exist post-pandemic, but I mean, it's a wonderful brand. They recognize Taman Tugu of one of the top 10 best new openings in the world in 2019.
Amazing.
So we sometimes take our spaces, our green spaces for granted, but on a global basis, having such a green site in an urban setting was magnificent for them in comparison to the various sites across the world. Right smack in the middle of the pandemic in 2020, we received an honorary recognition from the World Urban Parks Association for the work that we have done in the rehabilitation, conservation, preservation, and management of the site. And this includes the various education programs and things like that.
Well done.
So support has been wonderful, and we are very, very grateful for that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, now, what sort of, I guess, you know, partnerships would be helpful to Taman Tugu at present, you know, as you guys are reopening and, you know, starting again, you know, what sort of things, what sort of partnerships would be helpful?
I think collaborations and partnerships with corporates are important because it would definitely help us from a funding perspective. That said, it's always good when you can find partners who have the same objectives and intent So they believe in sustainability, they believe in activation, while maintaining the essence of what Tamantugu is all about. I think that's key. Also, our NGO partners and communities, working with them to make this possible. So it's, you know, with partnerships, then you can have more educational programs, more activities for people. I think what we also did pre-COVID, and we'll probably look at introducing it again one day soon, would be, you know, like Zumba and yoga. We had that, and it was open for free to public too. You know, people had just could just walk in and just join. So I think that would be key. Obviously, I have to say that we wouldn't be where we are today without the support of Khazana leading in making this possible. And all the communities in Malaysia, the public, and even the media for also being very supportive of us. I think that's played a crucial role to where we are today. And even at the looking at the numbers, visitorship, and even from a funding perspective, what we've achieved today, it's all been because of the support of many people, actually.
If I were to bucket all this, Juliet, right? So we've got a whole track in terms of the conservation, preservation, and activation of the site. When I say activation, it's the various activities we have, from education programs to Zumba to health and fitness programs and things along those lines. So for that, we work through the civil society group, the various NGOs that are available out there. Mm-hmm. And apart from this landmark CSR program, which Khazana has been doing, Khazana also does a lot more within this space through our other foundations, Yayasan Hasanah being one of them. So we work through Yayasan Hasanah and through the various NGOs that Yayasan Hasanah sponsors and collaborates with. Think City is another foundation of Khazana. We work through them as well, and they provide a lot of input and advice. And working through various government agencies and ministries to enable all this to happen. So that's very helpful. Then the other bit is around the sustainability. And when I talk about sustainability here, I'm talking about it in the sense of financial sustainability. Mm-hmm. And this is where corporates and individuals come in and play a role from contributions to donations, to adoption of park elements. So when you talk about partnerships, that's going to be helpful. As I mentioned earlier, Khazana couldn't have done this alone. So we work through these various partners out there to ensure that this place is successful today and into the future. The idea is that your kids whom you brought there will bring their kids.
That is the hope. And, you know, as you mentioned earlier, Tracy, you know, there's some things that, you know, regular folk like me can do. You know, we can adopt trees, we can adopt benches, things like that, right? How can the public actually do that?
They can just email us, ask@tamantuguproject.com.my. So that's ask@tamantuguproject.com.my. Drop us an inquiry and we can furnish them with the details. Or the other option, which is also available for people, and they do it quite often at the park itself, is you can adopt a tree, but not one particular tree, but you can get an e-certificate, which you can dedicate it to your kids or your friends as a birthday gift, or just as appreciation to nature. So that's also possible.
Okay, excellent. I know some people might want to know, is this also tax deductible?
For the adoption programs, let's say if it's an e-certificate and that's like 100 ringgit and above, then yes, that would be tax deductible.
Okay. All right. So just get in touch with you guys. I guess just head to the website, tamantuguproject.com.my. All the information is there. Am I correct?
It is. Or if not, follow us on Facebook and Instagram, Friends of Tamantugu. You can also get in touch with us there too. Okay. And you also get updates of what's happening at the park, you know, when we resume events and activities. Mm-hmm. One can also join up and sign up there.
When we talk about supporting the park, we don't expect you to always drop a dollar. come use the space, appreciate it, learn from it, bring people to enjoy the place, use it well. On that note, one of the other things that I've really enjoyed seeing in the space is that people use that as a platform for their own giving. So we've had people who say that, you know, I'm going to sponsor a busload of kids from a foster home. We'll bring them there and they collaborate with us. We take them for a walk through the site, provide them with a bit of education. They have a bit of a makan there. And, you know, it's one of those places where you can do something like that. So those are some of those things.
And actually, just to sidetracking a little, when we used to have events at Taman Tugu, like the Earth Day or Eco Day, we used to also bring in school kids and underprivileged communities so that they could be involved and included in such events, you know, and we would also arrange transportation for them to make it easier for them to attend such events. So we hope to be able to do that again sometime soon.
Okay, excellent. I mean, it's, again, you know, as a personal testimony, I can't tell you how much I love that place and, you know, how much, you know, the time I spent with my children there, you know, they remember it. You know, they're like, can we go back to that park? You know, they remember all the experiences from there, you know, not the stuff that we did at the malls, what we did at the park, you know, just jumping in the river, you know, looking for insects, learning about trees. There's so much that you can gain. And right here in the center of the city, we don't have to travel very far. So it's a wonderful space to visit. And I hope lots more people do.
We hope so too.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Calvin Jacob. He's the executive director of the Taman Tugu Project, and Tracy Surin, who's the head of fundraising, activation and communications, also with the Taman Tugu Project. Again, if you'd like to find out more, just head to tamantuguproject.com.my or follow them on social media. I think you mentioned Facebook and Instagram, right, Tracy?
That's right.
Okay.
Friends of Taman Tugu.
Friends of Taman Tugu, excellent. So, and find out how you can support and go visit if you can, you know, as soon as you can as well. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can download the podcast at bfm.my/earth or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.